This is Beth, compulsive eater and the leader for this Thornbridge workshop on seventh tradition and spirituality. Thank you everybody for being here, whether you're tuning in live or listening to a recording. We're really excited to present this workshop today. We're going to have several speakers and a person reading some of our literature on the seventh tradition, and then an opportunity for questions and answers. And I want to thank our speakers and readers and participants today. We're going to have Michael D., Susan M., Carolyn P., Adele P., Beth L., and Ken H. And so this is a workshop we coined as Seventh Tradition and Spirituality to really look at how does practicing the seventh tradition in our lives in our recovery draw us closer to our higher power. It is a great benefit to have money for our organization that needs financial support, but primarily it is about looking at ourselves and surrendering our lives and our wills over to our higher power, which includes our financials and other aspects of our lives, and letting our higher power use those resources for the good of CHOW and reaching out to other compulsive eaters and carrying the message. So I really look forward to hearing how people share their experience, strength, and hope on practicing the seventh tradition in their lives as it adheres to spirituality. So we have, first off, Adele P. to read our seventh tradition. So go ahead, Adele.
Hi, Adele. Seventh tradition seven. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, decline outside contribution. No AA tradition had the labor pain this one did. Collective poverty initiated a matter of necessity, fear of exploitation, necessity of separating the spiritual from the material, decision to subside on AA volunteering contribution only, placing the responsibility of supporting AA headquarters directly upon AA members, barely running expense plus a prudent reserve is headquarter policy. And that's the short form on page 11 in the table of contents and the 12 and 12. Okay, the loan form on page 190 to 191 in the 12 and 12. The AA group themselves ought to be fully self-supporting by the voluntary contribution of their own members. We think that each group should, should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by group, club, hospital, or other outside agent, that acceptance of large gifts from any source or a contribution carrying any obligation, whatever, is unwise. Then, too, we view with such concern those AA treasury which continue beyond prudent reserve to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience had often warned us that nothing can be surely destroyed our spiritual heritage as feudal dispute over property, money, and authority. That's it, Beth.
Great. Thank you. So Adele read the paragraph at the beginning of the AA 12 and 12 for Tradition 7, kind of the paragraph of what the tradition is, kind of the chapter in a nutshell. And then she read the long form of their traditions, which are found in the AA 12 and 12, but it's also found in the back of the big book on page 563. But the tradition we hear at every meeting is the one sentence of Tradition 7, which is, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. So with that, we're going to have Michael D. share his experience, strength, and hope, and I will be timing. He'll be speaking for 15 minutes. At 10 minutes, I'll say 5 minutes left, and then 1 minute warning. So, Michael, go for it.
Michael, compulsive eater, and thank you, Beth, for asking me to speak today. And just to qualify, I have 5 years, 8 months, and 29 days today. And, you know, the long form was actually something I was going to read because we don't really talk about it and read it that much. And ultimately, it really doesn't matter how we define the seventh tradition. You know, for some people, it's gaining spirituality. Others see it as avoiding outside interference. However you do it, it's not wrong, and both of them are valid. You know, emotional and spiritual support are one thing, but when it comes to financial matters, compulsive eaters must be self-supporting. And I know it's not always easy, but it's the right thing to do. And for me, you know, what would I have if all I have is abstinence and I'm not learning to take responsibility? Because part of my compulsive eating story is that I didn't take responsibility for a lot of things. And I also felt like, you know, it should just happen. It was this magical thinking, and, you know, a lot of my compulsive eating had a fantasy attached to it, like it'll work out someday. And I can eat as I want, but, you know, I'm not going to gain any weight, I'm not going to have any issues, it's all going to be okay. And so my history is that I came into the program in 99, had about 2 years of clean abstinence, lost 150 pounds. It was working really well, so I left. And then I had, and people call it a slip, you know, that my slip lasted over 8 years. I gained and lost 550 pounds. And when I came back into the program, I made a commitment immediately that I would give $3 to every meeting. And I made that commitment to my higher power. And at the time, it was really difficult because I came into the program and in 90 days, my entire business was falling apart. And, you know, I remember sitting at my desk one day and saying, you know, to God, it would be a great idea to eat. And then it came to me that if I did that, nothing in my day would have gone well. And so I chose not to, and I made outreach calls. And then when I hit 3 years of abstinence, I was praying and meditating, and it came to me that what I would do is give a dollar for every year of abstinence plus $1 for those who came before me. So today I give $6 a meeting. And, you know, I've heard people say to me, like, what are you going to do in 20 years? And I'm like, well, I only have to worry about today. And I also believe that I somehow always found the money to buy sugar, flour, and the quantity of food that I wanted. You know, I was just fortunate in that sugar, flour, and quantity of food are very relatively inexpensive. And, you know, it says in the 12 and 12, you know, to people familiar with endless drives for charitable contributions, AA presented a strange and refreshing spectacle. Approving editors, editorials here and abroad generated a wave of confidence in the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous. They pointed out that the irresponsible had become responsible, and that by making financial independence part of its tradition, Alcoholics Anonymous had revived an ideal that its era had almost forgotten. So we look to today, and we look to see how, and why is this important to me? It's important to me because I am not one of those people who had to lose 5 pounds. When I was 5 pounds overweight, the first place I turned to was see how. My story is that I tried a lot of different methods to try to at least abate the outward manifestation of my compulsive eating. And everything I tried didn't work. Nothing worked. There's nothing I've ever done that has worked like see how. And so, yeah, maybe I'm just a realist, but it makes sense to me that I'd want see how to continue to function for selfish reasons, if nothing else. And, you know, I can't ask a meeting location, or I can't ask the hotel that we do the annual business conference in to be really cool and be like, hey, come on, man, you know, we collected no money, but you guys are really cool, and you'll give us everything for free because, you know, we're not eating compulsively anymore, so you should be in awe of us. The news is that most people don't eat compulsively. Most people don't have problems with condiments like I do. So they don't understand. That's why I'm in Compulsive Eaters Anonymous. It's because I can say in a meeting that I have problems with condiments, and everyone goes, oh, yeah, I get that. You know, I can see how that's an issue. And also for me, I need to have some sort of tangible way of showing my higher power that I believe that I'm going to be taken care of. And I'm telling you that even, you know, as recently as last month, I was sitting there about to give $6 in a meeting, and I was like, if I give this $6, I am going to be homeless. This is going to be my demise. This is where it's all going to go away. And for me, that's a deeper surrender to go, okay, I'm going to set that aside. My job isn't to worry about the results. My job is to chop wood and carry water. I'm going to do this, God. But please, you know, have me, you know, help me out and make sure that I'm not homeless and I'm not going to starve to death. And good news is I'm not homeless and I have not starved to death in the last ensuing weeks. But, you know, we're talking about that for me, I also wanted everyone around me to take care of me, you know, and it's not, self-sufficiency was not something that I thought a lot about. And the other thing that's important to me is I don't want an outside entity to come in and dictate the terms of See How. Because frankly, if that would work, I would have done what the outside agencies wanted to do. I need to be what the program is. That's why as I sponsor, I speak to my sponsees about being self-supporting. And I also talk to them about, you know, giving a dollar in a meeting, it's not sufficient. And, you know, I live in Southern California. I go to meetings. I walk out into the parking lot, and people are driving, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 cars. I am like, you can do this. And, you know, you can do this efficiently. And it's not just, you know, I have a meeting where our rent is fairly high, and you know, people pat themselves on the back because we collect $40 a week for rent. And I'm like, and I'm the treasurer. And so when I have my announcement, I say, you know, part of what we're doing here in Seventh Tradition is not only for this meeting to be self-supporting, but to support other levels of the meeting, of the organization. Because what's my primary purpose? It tells me in the big book, I have a new employer. If I keep him close and do his work well, paraphrasing, I'm going to be okay. Well, my job is to carry the message to those who still suffer. The first tradition is what? Unity. So I have to do this as a group. You know, I can't just go ahead and write a check for $100,000 and keep the group okay. That's not going to work. And so am I really, as a group, are we doing our job if all we're doing is able to keep our heads above water? Because we need each other. You know, I mean, it says it in the 12 and 12, you know, we're basically, you know, shipwrecked here. And if we were out in the ocean, I wouldn't say to someone, you know, I'm not going to help you do this. I'm not going to give you everything I have to keep us all alive. And that's how serious this is for me. You know, and it says, this is, for me, I was also selfish and self-centered. I don't know if anyone else had experienced that in their compulsive eating. But I've heard people say, and I'm, you know, get between me and my food, and it was a problem. This is the first time that I'm able to be selfless. I'm able to, you know, that I'm not the only one in the world who has to struggle, that, you know, there's others like me, and that I'm able to show by what I'm giving and what I'm doing, and that this is important, and that I'm not the most important thing. And, you know, and again, I walk into a meeting and I see people holding, you know, $4 cups of coffee and giving nothing into the basket. That doesn't work. It doesn't work because what are we doing? You know, how are we helping each other? And what am I willing to give up? What am I willing to do to help the program? I'm willing to do anything. I'm willing to give service. I'm willing to give, you know, of myself. I'm willing to take a call whenever someone's in need. And I'm willing to make sure that the meeting functions. And that's a big thing for me. And it means a lot. And that's why being involved in this program and being so passionate about the Seventh Tradition is important to me, because I need this program. I don't know what happens without it. I mean, I don't, you know, not one of those people saying I know what's going to happen if it goes away, but I know that if it's here, I feel better. I know that I'm happier. I would think nothing of spending money on something in the outside world that makes me happy. I go on vacations. I go out to dinner. I do all these other things. Why would I not support the program? Thank you. Why would I not support? Thanks, Beth. Why would I not support the program that's saving my life? And why would I not make this part of my spiritual practice? And by the way, this my idea of this is not anything new. This is centuries of spiritual practice has gone into, you know, donations and tithing and things like that. And so for me, this is no different than prayer and meditation. It's a way for me to give of myself for the good of the group and also show that I believe. And I think at that, I am going to pass.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Michael. Since we have a little bit of time, because I have about 15 minutes for speaker and we're moving quickly. Is there anybody on the line, and if Michael, if you're willing, have any questions directly for Michael about his experience, strength, and hope, and how he practices the Seventh Tradition?
I left him speechless. I killed him.
powerful. Well, thank you. There'll be an opportunity for questions and answers. Thank you, Michael. All right, and so now we have an opportunity to hear a little bit more about our readings from Seventh Tradition. Adele, go ahead.
Okay, this is from Tradition 7, page 161, the first paragraph, and I'm going to read to page 163 to the very last paragraph. Okay, alcoholics are certainly all or nothing people. Our reaction to money proved this. As AA emerged from its infancy into adolescence, we swung from the idea that we needed vast sum of money to the notion that AA shouldn't have any. On every lips were the words, you can't mix AA and money. We should have to separate the spiritual from the material. We took this violent new tech because here and there members had tried to make money out of their AA connection, and we would fear we would be exploded. Now and then, gratefully, benefactors had endowed clubhouses as a result. There was sometime outside interference in our affairs. We had been presented with a hospital, and almost immediately the donor's son became its principal patient and would-be manager. One AA group was given $5,000 to do with what it would. This hassle over that chunk of money played havoc for years. Frightened by these complications, some groups refused to have a cent in their treasury. Despite this misgiving, we had to recognize the fact that AA had to function. Mean place called something. To save whole areas from turmoil, a small office had to be set up, telephones installed, and a few full-time secretary hired. Over many protests, these things were accomplished. We saw that it were the man coming in the door couldn't get a break. These simple services would require small sum of money, which we would and could pay ourselves. At last, the pendulum swung and poems great at Tradition 7 as it read today. In this connection, Bill liked it to tell the following point story. He explained that when Jack Alexander's Saturday Evening Post piece broke in 1941, thousands of frantic letters, this strange alcoholic, distraught alcoholics and their family hit the foundation letterbox in New York. Our office staff, Bill said, consisted of two people, one devoted secretary himself. How could this landslide of appeal be met? We had to have some more full-time help. That was sure. So we asked the AA group for voluntary contribution. Would they send us a dollar a member a year? Otherwise, this heartbreaking mail would have to go unanswered. To my surprise, the response of the group was slow. I got mighty sore about it. Looking at this avalanche of mail one morning at the office, I paced up and down, ran how irresponsible and tightwad my fellow members was. Just then, an old acquaintance stuck a tossing, aching head in the door. He was our prized slipper. I could see he had an awful hangover. Remembering some of my own, my heart felt filled with pity. I motioned him to my inside cubicle and produced a $5 bill. As my total income was $30 a week at the time, this was a fairly large donation. Lois really needed the money for grocery, but that didn't stop me. The intense relief on my friend's face warmed my heart. I felt especially virtual as though, as I thought of all the ex-drunks who wouldn't even send their foundation a dollar apiece. And here I was gladly making a $5 investment to fix a hangover. The meeting that night was at New York Old 24th Street Clubhouse. During the intermission, the treasurer gave a timid talk on how broke the club was. That was in the period when you couldn't mix money in AA, but finally he said the landlord would put us out if we didn't pay up. He concluded his remark by saying, "Now, boys, please go heavy on the hat tonight, will you?" I heard all this quite plainly as I was piously trying to convert a newcomer who sat next to me. The hat came in my direction, and I reached into my pocket, still working on my prospect. I fumbled and came up with a 50-cent piece. Somehow it looked like a big, very big coin. Hastily, I dropped it back and fished out a dime, which clinged thinly as I dropped it in the hat. Hats never got folded money in those days. Then I woke up. I who had boosted my generosity that morning, was treating my own club worse than the distant alcoholic who has got to send the foundation their dollar. I realized that my $5 gift to the slippy was an ego-feeding proposition. Bad for him and bad for me. There was a place in AA where spirituality and money would meet, and that would be was in the hat. Thanks, Beth. I'll mute.
Great. Thank you, Adele. Really appreciate it. All right. So there's some other pieces of literature. So on our website, if we wanted to talk about the seventh tradition, when we click on our website, seehow.org, in the top pink or salmon-colored bar, there's a Support the Fellowship tab. And when you click on that, it says Make a Donation, and it says Tradition 7. Every SeeHow group ought to be fully self-supported and needs declining outside contributions. In keeping with the seventh tradition, SeeHow is supported and continues to be available to us only through contributions from its members. If you are a member of SeeHow and would like to support the SeeHow Fellowship, you can do so now using PayPal. Simply click on one of the buttons below and complete the PayPal form. Your donation will be sent securely to WSO offices, and you will receive a receipt via email. So that's what we have on the seventh tradition as information. On AA's website, AA.org, when it talks about contributions and self-support, this is their information, which is not about how to send money to AA, but it's more about the purpose of the seventh tradition. It says, contributions and self-support. The seventh tradition states that the AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup and central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And this supports what Michael was sharing and the concept that, yes, it's a spiritual connection, it's a spiritual surrender, and that is our primary essence of being self-supporting with the seventh tradition. It also does provide money that allows us to literally house and operate our functions. So that's another piece of literature. I was looking through the AA Big Book, and it doesn't talk directly about the seventh tradition. There are lots of people's stories talking about how they've contributed to AA, whether it's financially or service. And so that's within the stories. The Big Book is mostly focusing on the steps rather than the traditions. And so I think the seventh tradition is a part of, not I think, I know, it is a part of my recovery of financial contribution, service contribution, and showing up and suiting up because we are self-supporting. And it's amazing when I practice traditions in my life and how when I'm self-supporting, I'm not emotionally needy on other people or maybe doing something that puts me at risk because I'm depending on others when it's not a healthy situation. And so, again, the seventh tradition is not just about money, and it is about spiritual growth, emotional growth, and physical growth with physical surrender. So it's been fascinating to see how the different literature relates and discusses the seventh tradition. So our next speaker is going to be Susan, and if you're ready to go, go ahead, Susan. Star 6 to unmute.
I'm here. Hi.
Great. Hi.
I am Susan. I'm a compulsive eater. Very grateful for this workshop. Really looking forward. Have enjoyed what I've heard so far and looking forward to hearing what is to come, including what's going to come out of my mouth and my brain and channeled through my higher power. I'll qualify by saying I have well over 12 years of abstinence, and I am grateful for the attitude that I have, that I'm never recovered. I'm always seeking more learning and growth. And certainly, another thing, I'm not finished with my qualification, is that I'm maintaining over 60-pound weight loss. And another piece of the qualification with regard to today's talk is I come from a frugal attitude around money, to the point where I've identified as being cheap. And, from childhood, I made this connection that having some money made me feel like I had control over this life that I didn't feel like I had control over. And that's how I operated, even when I, had committed to my program. I would reluctantly drop a dollar in the basket when I was at face-to-face meetings, and, and that was that was being very generous for how I felt about releasing money from my hold. Today, I am so aware of how we are operating on a shoestring. I'm 97% phone bridge participant with my meetings, and it's easy to forget to do that seventh tradition. And I just, back at the CEAHOW.org website, Beth pointed us to the PayPal, and I believe there's also an address for sending checks, way of sending directly to WSO, but you have to dig a little bit deeper to be to get the information about donating to the phone bridge, and that's one of those tabs at the top that says meetings and then phone bridge meetings, and then you scroll to the bottom for the information about either sending check or using PayPal. I have been sending a dollar a day to phone bridge, and then a little bit more generally, and then also doing that for WSO every year. And as this workshop has gotten started, I realize I'm going to up that commitment. I haven't decided how much up, but I recognize how each of us, if each of us actually fulfilled this tradition, and gave freely in the seventh tradition to support our meetings, and then our meetings release that money to area and WSO, we would be able to be stronger and bigger and be able to reach out further to those who do not yet know about us, or those who are in remote places and just having better access to our website. Our website was kind of stalled for quite some time when we lost our I forget what the right term is, but the person that was updating our website, webmaster. I want to also say, so I was giving to PhoneBridge and, was doing my part and still had that frugal way of trying to hold on to my money because I still valued it so much. And then I became a delegate at the business conference a few years ago and was able to see the money that was needed for operations at the WSO level and was able to see how little we were operating on, and that convention was paying for conference, but it was like, are we going to get enough people? Is the bottom line going to cover conference for the business of the good? And then looking at what two half-time people are covering all the needs at WSO, and they are doing it at really low wages, and they're doing an amazing job of keeping this organization going and growing, and there's going to be a day very soon when the executive director is going to be stepping down, and finding the next executive director when we are our pay is very modest. Will we find someone with the same commitment to making our organization continue and grow? And there's an office manager / bookkeeper who is supporting us in many, many, many ways at halftime at, not great wages at all. And, you know, there will likely be a day when she steps away and we're going to need to find someone else. And will our compensation be enough to attract that next person? So those pieces of information that came when I was at the business conference and saw the numbers made me recognize that it is so important to continue to talk about the seventh tradition, to continue to help people recognize that we need much more than what is being given, that when we look at the numbers of the people on PhoneBridge and what the average donation, when you say, okay, this is all the money that comes into PhoneBridge and this is this many people that are on the meetings and you divide it in, and it's a fraction of a dollar, a small fraction of a dollar, quite honestly. And that's not good enough. And my understanding is there are meetings that are holding onto a lot of money beyond what they've stated as their prudent reserve, not donating it upwards to AREA and WSO. And we need to keep on talking about how 12-step recovery came to understand that we are self-supporting, we're a nonprofit, we are not going to hold on to any more money than is a prudent reserve, and paying it out so that we can spread the message and we can maintain our maintain what we've got for the members that we, you know, that are with us now. You know, I want to go actually back to a piece of my qualification, which is when I first was introduced to 12-step food recovery, one of the really important things to me was that nobody was profiting from this problem, this deep essential problem that I had. And that was incredibly important to me, that this was just about helping each of us. There was no one that was making money from me. And that continues to, you know, to be there. I don't think about it these days in a conscious kind of way. But that fact of CHOW and 12-step recovery in general we're just cycling the money so that we can continue to have this place for recovery and we can continue to reach out and find those people that are desperately wishing they had a solution and don't yet know about it. I haven't even heard my 5-minute warning, but
yep. 5 minutes remaining, just perfect on the spot.
Yeah, but I was actually going to say I do feel like I have shared what was on my heart and in my mind, so I'm going to leave it at that. And
great. Thank you. So I was looking through more literature, and we have the 12 Traditions Study Guide, which are our questions for the 12 and 12 on the traditions, and particularly. And
this is Sarah. May I just add something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Real quickly on what Susan just mentioned. And yeah, thank you. This is wonderful. I'm really enjoying this this whole workshop so far. What I do and what I think is a great idea when I found out about the recurring payment at PayPal. So now I don't even have to worry about it at all. It's there. It comes out of my bank account every month, and it's wonderful. I really feel that I used to forget, and then I would send in more, and then I was all over the place. This way I know it's there. It comes out of the bank, and I don't have any thought about it anymore. Thanks for letting me share that.
Thank you, Cheryl. And so the Tradition 7 questions, discusses our literature, especially page 160 to 165 in the AA 12 and 12
part of what Adele read. So our fellowship stayed poor because it had to. Explain why this is so. Another question is, describe a time in which I've transformed from a dependent to self-supporting, especially financially. What profound changes occurred for me as a result? Another question is, when have I been all or nothing? Have my attitudes about money and spirituality also gone to extremes? Or Adele's going to be reading more about AA Comes of Age later, but pages 110 through 114 in AA Comes of Age discuss and reflect on the ideas that the less money and property they had to quarrel about, the less they would be diverted from their primary purpose. But this doesn't mean no money at all. There was a place where spirituality and money would mix, and that was in the hat. How does the act of service and see how enable us to support ourselves, our fellow members, our current meetings, and our inner group? Am I self-supporting and doing service in my group, or do I depend on others to keep it running? Do I do my fair share? Do I tend to hold on service positions, or do I encourage a rotation of service? There's more literature on in these questions with AA Comes of Age, page 113 to 114 in particular. Describe the trust implicit in the decision to turn away money gifts at a time of financial aid. Have I ever taken a similar leap of faith? And finally, how does Tradition 7 foster unity in See How? So these are some questions to think about if you haven't had the opportunity to write on the tradition questions. These do come after our steps, and they're powerful. Because the steps help me work my program, the traditions help me to work with others. When I apply the traditions as written in all areas of my affairs and all different principles, it helps me to connect and be more responsible with others in my life. And so I think sometimes, well, I'll take it. It's easy for me to work the steps. Like, I've got those memorized. I can spew them off. I actually almost said them in Japanese when I was living in Japan. I was trying to explain them in Japanese. That was fun. But the traditions, they're a little bit more businessy. And so I know I don't always refer to the traditions in my daily life. And I just want to encourage us to think about the traditions more and how we practice those in all areas of our affairs. Okay, we have our next speaker, who is Carolyn, and I'll let her qualify. Go ahead, Carolyn.
Okay, thanks, Beth. Carolyn, compulsive eater, hopefully you can hear me okay. And I have been in See How and gratefully absent for 13 years, and God willing, on the 28th of this month, I am grateful to have God have inspired See How and all the efforts of so many to make See How what it is. And part of what I've been asked to speak about today is really kind of, you know, where the question comes up a lot to me is where, you know, we kind of talk generally, there were, Susan just referenced a couple expenses specifically, but in general, we've kind of talked, you know, supporting WSO, supporting the service structure, and we've talked in kind of generalities, but some people want to know a little bit more about, like, kind of what's some specifics, like what costs something. And so today, from the perspective of I've served as treasurer at the intergroup, the area, and now 6 years at the WSO level, and having some very hands-on awareness of what it does cost to actually run the organization and what the money is used for, and to Susan's point, how much on a shoestring we had been operating. And seeing, and I will also say the other perspective from coming from the WSO level, is we've also seen intergroup contributions. I'm going to talk about a little bit more where the money comes from in a minute, but the intergroup contributions decrease about 5% a year over the past 5 years. We have seen an increase in direct giving to WSO, which we're grateful for, and there are other ways that we've been able to maintain, but it is a concern, you know, to see things dropping off, which we understand can be for other reasons, but we want to be sure, which and I will also say at the end, like, what can you do, that we are all doing our part. So those of us who, you know, we are part of this organization, that each one of us are doing our part for the organization. But with that, what I am going to really talk about today is kind of focused on, you know, what is the money used for? Where does it go? And there is a great presentation out on the website under seehow.org and under service bodies, and down at the end at the bottom there is a box to click on for See How It Works, and it really covers like the organization as a whole and then delves into, there's different components of it, but one of which is See How It's Funded. And so that gets a little bit more into kind of at what level. The beginning of the presentation gets into all the service structure, and then getting into what are the expenses generally at each level of the organization. Not in detail, but, you know, enough to give a good sense of where it does go. So on that note, in order to understand how the flow of money, how it is used, it is helpful to view See How service structure, as I mentioned. As I talk about the service structure and how funds are generated, I'll make some generalizations because each area does have its differences, so it's a little challenging to be really a generalization, but just know that each service level does provide many valuable functions, and I'm not going to be speaking to all the valuable functions that they service bodies provide, but more so how do they actually use some of the funds that are given. And I think to take a moment first and to kind of visualize, some of you have seen the inverted triangle, that at the top is our members. So the big side of the triangle is the members at the top, and then members become part of the groups. Groups are part of an intergroup. Intergroups are part of an area. Areas come together at our World Service Business Conference. That is where a lot of the work of the organization is done, that and the decisions made for See How as a whole, when, you know, new literature gets approved, et cetera, that comes through our WSBC. And then we have the World Service Office and World Service Board. So if you can kind of visualize that, and then if you can also visualize that there's a few different ways that money does come into, and self-supporting. Seventh Tradition is about being self-supporting. There are various ways that we are self-supporting. One is through the contributions, and that is the most effective because there's very little cost involved. So if somebody gives a dollar through a contribution, that is more impactful than a dollar going towards, necessarily, towards the same dollar going towards convention or literature, because there's other costs involved for those. But I will say that it really is about all of these parts coming together to support the organization, and that allows the See How to be self-supporting. So it is not just the giving at the meeting level, that is absolute critical. That makes up about 74% of what flows, at least at the WSO level. So those contributions are incredibly important to the organization. But also, you know, participating in convention, participating in events that go on down, you know, at the various levels of the organization. Purchasing literature is a very important function of the that everybody does, and that's part of where the self-supporting comes into, by purchasing literature, because there's net proceeds from that, so that helps the organization. And whenever we copy literature or do scan it and email it to somebody, that's undermining the organization, and it's also not giving the person the privilege to be self-supporting on their own right. And so those are some things to think about. So generally, the income streams at both the WSO level as well as every level of our organization, it's the contributions from members, it's the net proceeds from events that are put on, and it's the net proceeds from literature that is sold. And so those are all very important, and each one is important and to participate in. So with that, when we look at the, particularly if we look at, so what expenses, let's see, so income comes in at the, let's say, at the meeting level, and the way that the money flows right off the bat is the meeting covers their own expenses, that 50% of it, then the net for a meeting goes to the intergroup, 20% goes to the area, and 30% goes to WSO. The typical uses of the funds at the service level, so at the group, the intergroups, the areas, are primarily looking at filing for nonprofit status. So to do that, so that our contributions might be tax deductible, there's a cost and a lot of work involved to do that. Fortunately, it's become less expensive and less involved to do that, but it is still an expense to the service level to do that. There's also ongoing accounting services, often depending on the complexity, size and complexity of the service organization, and that's at the intergroup or area level. It's also notable that at each service level also raises up members, representatives, to serve at the next level. So meetings identify and have intergroup representatives who serve at the intergroup level. Intergroup identifies and elects area representatives that serve at the area level. And then the area then identifies and elects delegates to serve at the world service level. And with that, there are some expenses. The most typical expense there is the travel expense. So depending on the region, depending on the area, depending on the, you know, the geographic coverage of a given area or intergroup and how they hold their meetings, has an impact on whether they fund travel expenses for that person. So like in Area 2, they, you know, the intergroup funds the area representative to attend the area meetings. The area then provides the funding, and all of the areas provide the funding for delegates, for delegates they've elected to attend at World Service. So that is one of the most, the biggest expenses for the, at the area, particularly at the area level. And that, you know, if you look at Foundridge having 14 people who can attend, who we can have delegates for, that's, you know, a good, a significant amount of money that needs to be funded through that. And so those are some of the expenses. There's also, you know, many events that are put on, so that those events may need some initial funding for them, but ultimately the events should be self-funding and actually provide net proceeds to the organization. But those are kind of some of the main expenses above the meeting level that we see for the intergroups and the areas. Then moving, and there used to be offices too, intergroups, in the past have had offices, now with where technology has evolved to and expenses have evolved to, most intergroups no longer have an office, but they operate virtually, and then they come together for their various meetings.
5 minutes remaining.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so then I really want to focus in on, so where does the money go from a WSO level? We've talked about the service level below. And from the WSO level, we talked about that we do have two staff that are part-time people. Yeah, one's an executive director, one's an office manager and accountant. And they provide a wealth of services for the organization, and about 60% of our cost structure goes to support those positions. And those positions basically promote our unity and continuity. They are the voice of CHOW, so there's a place to call. They have the organizational memory, and so, you know, individuals call, intergroups call, areas call, they have questions, how was this handled, why are we, you know, what do we do about this, and they can provide that feedback back. They serve all members and groups and intergroups and areas throughout the world through phone and email communication. We also have them being the initial contact with professionals and potential members, so that we have some place to say and people that we know will be there, similar to what they were talking about with AA, that there's somebody's there to help answer some of this mail. And so we need people who are there and that we know will be there, and they're paid to be there. They maintain records for our organization. We are a, CHOW has a corporation. The officer, it is a, you have to be incorporated. Actually, at the time, you had to be incorporated to be a nonprofit. And so even though we're a nonprofit, we still are a corporation. We don't, we have to distribute everything that we make. We can't hold on to, and we have to use the funds that we make. But we are still a corporation, and that does entail various functions and various filings and things like that that need to be done. We also have trademarks on the CHOW name and CHOW logo, so that needs to be maintained, and there's costs around that. Those services, the administrative services and the people, the staff, also provide literature, order, and fulfillment. And they also get, like, when a new piece of literature has been approved, they go to and get the quotes on the literature, and they make sure that it's in a format that can be printed, and, you know, they basically oversee that whole process. So the website, and they also do website updates and maintenance, and have taken on more of that as our past webmaster stepped out. And they also maintain our nonprofit status, and they maintain a physical location because a number of people, you know, come by and pick up literature, or that there's a place and a focal point for our organization, since we don't have these locations now at a lower level, at a higher level. If we look at the inverted triangle, at a higher level, that we don't have these locations anymore, it's still our central hub for our organization, and really provide that centralized support. And they also provide significant support to the work that is done at the World Service Business Conference. That takes a significant amount of time to pull all the material, to keep it all organized, the delegates and everything, and pull the materials together, make sure everybody's coordinated, that we all have the motions and everything that need to be addressed, and help with that. They also play a significant role in, because it's tied in with identifying the hotel, finding the contract for the hotel for convention, as well as conference, and so a lot of work goes into that. So they are really the hub that really kind of pulls everything together, keeps the organization, helps keep the organization focused and moving, and allows CHOW to continue to function. And I want to just reiterate that, you know, we need to have our, keep our 501c3 and other things in our corporation current to be able to have C-HAL continue to function. So that takes time and energy. And we also have accounting records. And the last thing
about a minute left, but go ahead. About a minute, but you feel free to go over if you need to.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. So, again, they do a lot of work to help carry the message within the organization as well as outside of the organization. We also, you know, of course, provide that with the physical location, have things like rent and just, and there's insurance too that that has to be paid. There's workers' comp insurance. There's errors and omissions insurance. There's some very practical things that have to be done to have an organization that many of us just don't think about. You know, it's like, what is this? This is a nonprofit. We're like, you know, what's the big deal? Well, we are a corporation, and we are we do have to function in the world of under state and federal regulations, and we need to be maintaining those. And we and it takes money. It takes specific money to pay for, you know, various registrations, as well as it takes time and energy of the staff to do that. And they have done a yeoman's job. And Susan has spoke to that we are in the process of, you know, Pamela will be stepping down. The executive director will be stepping down. We need to be replacing that position after her many, many years of service. And we're very grateful for that. So somebody stepping into a very well-run situation. But at the same time, you know, time will tell whether whether there's somebody who we can, who's willing to accept the terms as it has been. And we would love, and just to put it out there, we would love to have somebody internally who would be stepping up as executive director. But at least at this point, it does not appear that somebody internally will step up and that we will be going externally to fill that position. Oh, and so kind of coming back to, so I've talked about the seventh tradition and how it flows, you know, from the member. Everything starts with the member. If the member doesn't attend a conference, at the convention, if the member doesn't, you know, pay for literature, if the member doesn't contribute through the contributions at their meetings or directly to one of the service levels, then it doesn't happen. And, you know, I was thinking about this past year about how, you know, an organization, the Red Cross, if they need money, they go put an ad out on the, they put an ad on TV and, you know, and appeal to the masses for money. They can get money from anywhere when they need it. In our organization, if you and I are it, we can't go outside for money. We can't accept outside money. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. If we aren't, and if I am not giving, then, you know, it just takes all of us. And it's, you know, it's so easy to point to, oh, somebody else will do it. Somebody else has been doing it. I don't need to be doing this. And so it takes each one of us. And so what each one of us can do is do our part, reflect on our own giving. I will say that, you know, that 50 cent piece that we read about that Bill regretted not putting in when he threw in the dime instead, 10 cent piece, instead of putting in the 50 cent piece, that 50 cent piece back in 1941 would be $8.56 today. So, you know, inflation has cut into it, but a lot of our giving and our thinking about giving has not changed. And so that is something that we all need to really look at. One of our sister organizations, actually in their seventh tradition pamphlet, recommends, we have not put out a recommendation yet, but recommends $6 a meeting. Or if you're a phone bridge person, and they specifically address phone bridge in their seventh tradition pamphlet, to contribute $6 a day, because you might be on more than one meeting. But if you're, you know, so it's the $6 is the where they've settled in on to for people to think about giving. And, you know, there's some people who, you know, that is a real stretch for, you know, if they're on a lot of meetings and stuff and or go to a lot of meetings, and that might be too much of a stretch. But there are many of us who can do that, and there are many of us who could do more than that. And so I know for me, I look at, you know, my giving. I do giving at the intergroup recurring. I do WSO recurring. I also do Gratitude Month. I also do a number of other ways that I give on a regular basis through the works of the organization, but actually with it doing various things and not necessarily seeking reimbursement for them. And so those are ways of my own giving, and I find that incredibly important. And I, like others have mentioned, that, you know, particularly with reoccurring, I was intergroup treasurer, and this was for the phone bridge. And at the time, you know, I have all these contributions coming in, and I keep forgetting to even do my own. So once we set up the recurring and got that going, that was such a relief. And I actually do focus on, you know, whenever I see that, you know, I actually run it through PayPal, and it does hit my credit card. And I take a pause and I think about it each when I look at my credit card statement to get that spiritual connection back to that giving. You know, since I'm not physically giving it, you know, it's happening automatically, I find that it's really important that I give thanks and remember why I'm giving and what this program has meant to me. And so I take a time each month to do that and to pray for the organization. So I think that's something to consider with the recurrings. Also, so we really need to do our part, reflect on our own giving. The second thing we can do is really reinforce to our sponsees. So if we've, you know, gotten to the level where we do have sponsees, stress the importance of giving. And ask, you know, it can be a thing that we don't think maybe we should, but to ask, you know, particularly when we're going through the tradition, what are you doing? Are you contributing? That should be a part of this process to give back to the organization that has given so much to us. And support, I touched on before, supporting the purchase of literature for ourselves, our sponsees, and those around us. That if you see somebody copying literature and handing it out, or if you know of situations like that, perhaps, you know, if there's a way to approach the situation to, you know, that is defeating, both from a personal level as well as the organization level. So so we become not self-supporting if we're doing that and not taking our own responsibility for that. Support convention by attending and participating support all events throughout the organization by attending and participating in raffles, boutiques, and other fundraising. Those things all help. And they're a lot of fun, too, and they're a great way to meet people. So there's a lot of benefit that comes from those types of things that we all do. And another thing that is something I'm sure many people have not thought about, but include See How in your will or trust. Many of us would, you know, have organizations that we might in our wills say that we want to leave money to, definitely family, but there's other organizations. But we don't think about See How. Well, with See How, you can contribute in a bequest $10,000. And so it's something to consider. And also on that note, we can contribute $10,000 a year. Any individual member can contribute $10,000 a year. And so, you know, we've had 2 years ago, we had an $8,500 from one person. This year, we had $3,000 from one person. We're not limited. Many of us think, oh, you know, it's just a few dollars, and that's, you know, what I do, and that's what I should be doing because of whatever reason. But no, in fact, you know, in these organizations, there are many who give much more than just the dollars. Some, many can't give more, and so, you know, that's understandable. But if you can, do, and consider it from that perspective. So, so with that, I'm actually going to wrap this up. I appreciate the extra time, Beth, and I decided to take advantage of it, and really appreciate everybody being out there and this topic, and would be happy to answer any specific questions. I have a lot of specifics in terms of, you know, where the money goes and where the money comes from and whatnot, and but not enough time to talk at a real detailed level. So with that, I will pass, and thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Carolyn. Really appreciate all the service you do and the work you do for our finances at the world level. And we have Adele to read a little bit more out of Coming of Age. Adele, are you able to do that?
Yes, I'm going to read from As Bill Sees It. Sorry, I changed it on you. Time versus Money, page 290. Our attitude towards the giving of time when compared with our attitude towards giving money present an interest contrast. We give a lot of our time to AA activity for our own protection and growth, but also for the sake of our groups, our areas, AA as a whole, and above all, the newcomer. Translated into terms of money, these collective sacrifices would add up to a huge sum. But when it comes to this actual spending of cash, particularly for AA service overhead, many of us are apt to turn a bit reluctantly. We think of the loss of all the earning power in our drinking years, of those sums we might have laid by for emergency or for education of the kids. In recent years, this attitude is everywhere on the decline. It quickly disappeared when the real need for a given AA service become clear. Donors can seldom see what the exact results has been. They will know, however, that countless thousands of other alcoholics in their family are being helped. And that's from the 12 concept, page 63 through 64. And I'm going to be reading As Bill Sees It, page 324. Spirituality and Money, and that comes from AA Come of Age, page 140 to 141. Some of us still ask, just what is the third legacy business anyhow, and just how much territory does service take in? Let's begin with my sponsor, Ebby. When Ebby heard how serious my drinking was, he resolved to visit me. He was in New York, and I was in Brooklyn. His resolve was not enough. He had to take action, and he had to spend money. He called me on the phone, then got into the subway, told the cost 10 cents. At the level of the telephone booth and subway turnstiles, spirituality and money began to mix. One without the other would have amounted to nothing at all. Right then and there, Ebby established the principle that AA in action called for the sacrifice of much time and a little money. And I'm going to be reading from our daily reflection, July 27th. The title is Give Freely. When we make every personal sacrifice necessary to ensure the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous, we would do this because we have learned to love God and one another. And that comes from AA Come of Age, page 234. To be self-supporting through our own contribution was never a strong characteristic during my days as a practicing alcoholic. The giving of time or money always demanded a price tag. As a newcomer, I was told we have to give it away in order to keep it. As I began to adopt the principle of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life, I soon found it was a privilege to give to the fellowship. As an expression of my gratitude, I felt in my heart, my love of God and of others became the motivating fact in my life. With no thought of return, I realize now that giving freely is God's way of expressing himself through me. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Adele, it's always great to hear where Southern tradition is covered in various aspects of our literature. And now we have speaker Ken, who's going to share his experience, Strength and Hope. Go ahead, Ken.
Well, I'm Ken, a compulsive eater, and very grateful to be on the line today. I really enjoyed all the shares and the reading up until now. It's been very educational, too. I really wasn't that aware of what went on the board level and in the intergroup level and where the money goes and that type of thing. I mean, I've heard for years and years and years, you know, that our contributions on Foambridge are very, very small, particularly, you know, compared with, you know, maybe what happens at face-to-face meetings. I'm not really sure what that is, but just to give you a little background, I've had a lot of time to think about this subject, and I don't just mean since Beth asked me to share. I came into the program over 45 years ago, so this is back in 1974, and so I remember when I first started, you know, of course, they used to pass, you know, the basket around for contributions, and I have to admit, the reason that I came to OA, because I was looking for diet clubs at the time, and there was no internet, so I was going through the Yellow Pages, and what attracted me was a little phrase which said, no dues and no fees. So that's why I came, as opposed to, let's say, going to a Weight Watchers or other places where, you know, I knew that there was going to be a charge. So, yeah, that's a little illustrative of the mindset, you know, that I came in with and maybe is shared by others as well. Anyway, when I got there, and once I began to embrace the program and recover and realized how wonderful it was and how much benefit it was giving me in terms of weight loss and overall mood and what have you, when the basket would go around, actually just out of sheer gratitude, I mean, I would put in, which at the time was probably considered a fairly good amount, like a dollar. And so, you know, at that point, it was almost, we've all heard the expression, well, what's in it for me? And so I think, again, you know, put your money where your mouth is. And I certainly put my money where my mouth was when it came to junk food. I didn't have any problems with spending a lot of money on that. And, you know, even today, if you go to a restaurant, which most of you know, it's not cheap to go to restaurants. It's not cheap to go get a cup of coffee at Starbucks, even though I don't drink it. I mean, it's a lot of money. And yet there seems to be this reluctance, which Adele read about, when it comes to the Seven Tradition basket, you know, not wanting to put the money in. And I really think that at its root, for me anyway, well, it's two things. The fear of financial insecurity, you know, somehow if I put $1, $2, $6, whatever it is, you know, I'm not going to have enough for myself, which is contrary to the spiritual rule, which is that we get back when we give out. So I'm really, in essence, do I have the faith that that is really true when it comes to money, that I will get back? And I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, winning the lottery or anything of that nature, but I will get back in some way in my life exponentially more than I'm giving, and that includes money. The other part about that is, you know, full disclosure, it's selfish. In other words, selfish and self-centeredness is the root of our problem. Well, it's pretty selfish to kind of not give to others, not give to the organization, and hoard it for myself. So, you know, it's harder because it's a core need that we all have, food, clothing, and shelter, but it really is not adhering to the program principles to practice these principles in all our affairs. And again, I mean, if we really were concerned about what's in it for me, well, there's a lot in it for me if I believe and have the faith that you get back what you give out. And I was really struck today about the fact that, I mean, what do we need this money for? It's not like, you know, the officers are, you know, using the money to take vacations and Aspen or or something of that nature. This is to reach other compulsive overeaters so that the word can get out there. And that's practicing the steps. You know, that's step 12. Carry the message to other compulsive overeaters. And thank God, you know, had there not been enough money to have a little ad in the Yellow Pages when I came in, I mean, I don't know where I would be, because this program is really saved my life. And so I really think that it does require faith. And I myself, what I do, and I think somebody mentioned it earlier, because if I tend to forget, I have like an automatic monthly deduction through PayPal, which goes to, you know, the CEL phone bridge. And that way, if I forget, I mean, obviously, I've always thought it's kind of comical, you know, in the literature where they say, well, we don't pass a literal hat or basket. Well, of course you don't. How would that work on a phone bridge? But, you know, but it is true that, you know, one of the differences is nobody can see us. Nobody knows what we're doing. It's different than a face-to-face meeting where maybe there's a little peer pressure. You know, the basket goes around and, you know, so, okay, I'm going to reach into my pocket and put something, you know, kind of a people-pleasing kind of thing. Whereas in the phone bridge, that's not likely to happen, obviously, because nobody knows what we're doing. But I know what I'm doing, and God knows what I'm doing. And, you know, so, again, I think it, you know, for me, it comes down to a faith exercise. Do I believe the adage that I get back what I give when it comes to money? And then have the faith that God's going to take care of me, that I'm not being irresponsible, I'm not watching, you know, I'm not doing some sort of, you know, improper spending. I mean, when I look at what I spend on, you know, you know, you name it, whether it's a gym membership or, you know, insurance payments, you know, going out to restaurants. I mean, it's exponentially higher than, let's say, giving, you know, let's say $6 per meeting. On the phone bridge. And but like anything else, it only works when I work it, if I actually do it. Will I take the step of faith? I am at a point in my life, I'm retired, so I don't have an ongoing income stream now other than my Social Security payments, which doesn't even come close, you know, to meeting my monthly expenses. So I do. We do have savings, which we're now drawing from, you know, that we've accumulated over the years to bridge the gap. But still, it takes a lot of faith. Okay, am I going to have enough money to take care of myself the rest of my life? And I don't have any guarantees on that. So that too, is a faith thing without me, you know, living in constant dread and fear or the fear of financial insecurity, which we're told again, you know, and the promises that will leave us. But if I don't put it to the test, I'm really never going to know. So believe me, I'm not perfect at this. I like to look for bargains every place I go. You know, I'm a coupon cutter. I go to the market. But when it comes to this, I really feel I have such an indebtedness to the program. I mean, what's my life worth? I mean, well, if it weren't for the program, I'm not sure I'd have one. I might be dead. or certainly miserably suffering in my disease at the very minimum. So, it's progress and not perfection. And now this isn't a topic that a lot of people like to hear about. I mean, they're not even honestly, there are not that many people on this line today. And I don't know if that's because it's Sunday or it's because it's 1 o'clock or whatever it is, but it's a subject that a lot of people tune out and know, oh, that's business, that's dry, I don't want to hear about it. But it's really, for me, folly if I ignore it, because it does affect me personally. Not only does it affect the organization, but it directly affects me too. And so, for today, I'm committed to being generous with my fellows and with the organization that has saved my life, literally. So I'm going to stop there and, turn it back over to you. And again, thank you, Beth, for organizing this and all your service. It was you did a wonderful job. And thanks to everybody else who's participated and who's just listening. And with that, I'll pass.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Ken, for sharing. All right. So I wanted to have an opportunity to share a little bit and then talk about what other people in our fellowship have suggested for strengthening our seventh tradition. So my name is Beth. I am a compulsive eater, and I've been in program and absent by the grace of God for since February 3rd, 2011, and God willing, we come up to 9 years in the next few weeks. And seventh tradition is something that, honestly, I struggle with. I struggle with financial insecurity, and I want to hoard my money. I don't want to give it up. And it's been a long process for me to realize it is a spiritual act of surrender, a way of providing sacrifice, offering worship to my higher power. I know there are religious organizations that suggest 10%, a tithe offering, and I consider that number for my donations, and I include that seventh tradition for me as part of that offering. And so it's a consistent, regular, reoccurring donation for me because it is a sense of surrender. I talked about how the third step in the seventh tradition or how the steps in the tradition interact and how I can put the seventh tradition in my daily life, and how do I incorporate the steps and the traditions in my daily life. And the third step for me is, made a decision to turn my life and will over to the care of my higher power, as I understand, or care of God as I understand God. And I can use that in terms of financial insecurity too, or taking step one, I'm powerless over alcohol, I'm powerless over food, I'm powerless over my financial insecurity, and my life has become unmanageable. And I came to believe that a power greater than me can restore me to sanity, restore my pocketbook to sanity, restore my fear of money or not enough, and then making that decision to turn my life and will over to the care of God as I understand God. And that third step, prayer, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Take away my difficulties so that victory over them may bear witness to those of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And I hope I quoted that correctly. But I can say, God, I offer my money to thee. I offer my fear of financial insecurity to thee, to build with me and to do with me, to do with my money, to do with my finances as you wilt. And that's something I get to practice in other situations, and I'm fed up with the people or situations. I have to pause and say, right now, God, my life is unmanageable because I'm trying to control my husband, and I need to restore me to sanity. Please help me, and I offer my control over my husband to you. And so I can really appreciate how these steps and traditions apply to all areas of my affairs, really. And for me, working step four makes me look at what is my part, my financial fear. Why am I afraid of how many hours my husband works, or what he charges his customers? You know, my part in it, financial insecurity. And, you know, I practice that fourth step, and I look at my character defects and recognize the abundance I have in my life, a sponsee I had. I write my gratitudes down of what I'm grateful for, how I see the hand of my higher power in my life, and a sponsee who added that with abundances. What are my abundances in life? And when I look at the abundance I have in the blessings my higher power has given me financially, that is something I can celebrate and something to rejoice and give thanks for. And that becomes an asset rather than a character defect. And then I go through step six and seven and make amends necessary. And then step nine, you know, and when I'm done with step nine, I experience the promises of the program. You know, on page 83 and 84 of the big book, the line specifically, fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. I'm just going to read them all because they're good. So page 83, the big book, if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We are going to know new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They are always materialized if we work for them. And this brings us through step 10, where when I'm triggered by money, I take that continued inventory. Step 11, you know, surrendering that to God, my higher power, through prayer and meditation. And step 12, working with others, carrying the message, being of service, and practicing that through financial contributions and time and service. I do have a reoccurring payment that I have through PayPal, and it's great because I don't have to, quote, obsess about it and have a debate with myself every single month. Oh, should I give to this meeting or should I not? And that is incredibly helpful. And I would like to probably increase my contribution. Right now, it's not where it would probably needs to be. I can rationalize, well, at least it's enough. It's more than 12 cents per meeting that the average phone bridge gives. At least it's more than that. And I can bring that to my higher power, bring that to my husband, too. There are financial responsibilities that we have, and our value as a couple is to discuss that. And so it's something, you know, I get to practice asking for what I need, asking, this is important to me, my recovery, my program, important to our relationship. So it's definitely worth a conversation for me. And there, I'll probably talk a little bit more, maybe we have question and answers, but there are many ways to support. The Zoom meetings is the new electronic meeting, and they have a PayPal account. You can support through PhoneBridge, PhoneBridge Treasurer. You can support through WSO, and you go to our website, and there's three clicks pretty much to go through PayPal. My husband is actually a cybersecurity expert, and he reassured me that PayPal has incredible encryption and high security, and so if people are afraid about money being stolen or their account or information, yes, there's always a risk, and yet PayPal has one of the highest security systems to ensure that people's money and information is not stolen online. There's a phone app, a PayPal app, if you want it directly on your phone, and you put in the appropriate email address that you want the money to, whether it's Funds or Treasurer or World Service or the Zoom address. There is information online where you can send our check information and have that. So there are many ways to do it. For me, it's a matter of willingness. The information is there. What am I going to do with it? What action am I going to take? I'd like to discuss a little bit about the workshop that we had at the at the forum, at the World Service Ministers Conference. I'm a delegate. I give service at the area level as the Area 10 Treasurer. I give service at the World Service Business Conference as a delegate and on several committees to serve WSBC as a whole. And so part of our business conference that we have in 2 days in July, there's always about an hour dedicated for a specific topic. And we had a forum discussion where people could share their experience, strength, and hope, and ask questions about the seventh tradition. So the discussion topic was how to help encourage all our members to be self-supporting. Dues and fees are not required, yet being self-supporting is a core tradition and value of our program. What can we do? How can we transfer the commitment and enthusiasm of the delegates to the rest of the members? These are some comments and personal experiences. At meetings, give $1 for each year, abstinent, plus $1. At some face-to-face meetings, the treasurer gives a brief report stating how much money was collected. At different 12-step groups, has a reminder on their homepage explaining where spirituality and money meet. They also give an example of inflation. Each board member is assigned to specific intergroups for the purpose of calling them to see where they might need help and to get input for fellowship health. At the PhoneBridge intergroup meeting, a motion was raised to add suggested $2 donation to the seventh tradition paragraph. The motion did not pass. Some people can only afford to put a little change in the basket, and others can put in more than $2. With inflation, 50 cents is now over $8. See how is at the age where growing pains start to happen. When we ask new members to buy literature instead of contributing, it may cause newcomers to think that contribution is not important. There is one correlation between finance and participation. One is leading and one is following. Some nonprofit organizations are willing to reduce the rent when people provide service for them. People are sensitive when it comes to money. So some solutions and ideas. At face-to-face meetings, display the flowchart that shows where the contributions go. Treasurers could send money on a monthly basis to the next level. Add short video clips on the website featuring anonymous testimonies about why members give more than $1. Schedule very low-expense retreats. For example, Area 10 held a phone bridge retreat that had 40 attendees at $15 plus larger, and we also had larger individual contributions from non-attendees. The total raised was almost $900, which was used to increase the dollar amount available for delegates and also to send contributions to World Service. 100 people contributing $25 a month would provide enough money for resources for all areas in World Service. Well, I'm adding that. I'm not sure what it would provide enough money for, but it's a significant amount that would help our program flourish. Add anonymous audio testimonials as a podcast or place on Instagram. When people hear there are no dues or fees, their minds stop. We can change it to something like, there are no dues or fees to be a member, but we need to pay the bills to contribute to the organization. The sponsor can encourage the sponsee, especially when they step up, to share their abundance. This could be added to the literature. At face-to-face meetings, keep passing the basket until the meeting meets the predetermined weekly goal or amount. Have each geographical area pick up an area of need from the WSO Treasurer's Report and get the word out. Instead of telling people what to do, be an example and tell them what you do. Communicate the different ways and methods of contributing. When leading meetings, use the word your. For instance, you could say your meeting and your contribution. Intergroup reps can have a discussion and take information back to the meetings. Intergroup reps can explain what the money is used for. Sponsors can explain to sponsees that we are self-supporting and the one way to carry the message is by giving. On a Fundbridge meeting, remind members that it takes money to keep an organization going and that it is a privilege to support your organization. Say, get your checkbook out or go to your PayPal account before you forget. The treasurer can encourage people to give more. And speaker seekers can encourage speakers to share how they give and what CHOW has done for their lives. So those were a few, actually all of them, but those were a few of, I'm sure, many different types of suggestions that we could practice as a whole. I would encourage if any of these jumped out at you to take some action. Feel free to call any of us on the line today to see what you can do, what I can do, what we can do as a fellowship to strengthen our seventh tradition. So with that, we have about 15 minutes left. And are there anybody on the line who have questions for any of the speakers or any suggestions or your own experience, strength, and hope regarding the seventh tradition? The floor is now open. You need to star 6 to unmute.
Hey, Beth. This is Ginger. May I share or talk?
Go ahead. Thank you, Ginger.
Okay. I just wanted to thank you and everyone who participated today because this is a WE program. And, you know, I've had the honor of doing service from the meeting level, intergroup level, area level, board level, delegate level, and board level and executive board level through the grace of God. And it is humbling. It's so wonderful to be able to be of service, but also it's eye-opening. And so if there's any way that we can encourage people to look inwardly and say, yes, I can do a recurring payment, even if it's really small. I know when I came into program, and it was 30 years ago when I came into our sister program this May, and what attracted me, like someone else shared, was that there were no dues or fees for members, because at the time, my husband was working not at a great job, and I was going to school full time, and I was 35 or 36 at the time, and, you know, I couldn't afford a program that was going to cost money every week. But, you know, one of the things I did at that time was I thought, okay, how can I help if I can't put a lot of money in? And so I began doing service earnestly, thinking that, yes, this would help, because we do need to do service as part of the seventh tradition, too. And then as I worked, I started giving more money in. And see how, after I was on the board and I really saw it so much differently, I started giving more. And after our sweet treasurer Carolyn's report, I'm thinking, okay, God, I need to look at this. Because truly, I try to be on a phone bridge meeting almost every day. And, you know, that's 30 days. And if I do $2 a meeting, that's $60 a month. You know, so where am I now and where do I want to be? You know, I'm blessed that I'm retired and I have a pension and I have Social Security. I'm not rolling in the dough, but I can look at increasing this even a small amount. If everybody increases even by a small amount, we're going to do okay. But really, and as a sponsor, it is important that we work with our sponsees, not just talking about service, because we do want to make sure they're doing service, but ask them about the seventh tradition in terms of, you know, contributions. Because, you know, I think about how much a binge cost me. It was a lot. Now, it wasn't $60, but if you put them up a couple days together, it sure could be. So anyway, I'll pass. But, you know, again, thank you for your service. And if you're listening and if you've never used PayPal, it's really easy. And if you need help, I know people can help you. I know we can't give out phone numbers on recorded messages, but I'd be happy to help anybody who needed that help. And thank you very much. I'll pass.
Thank you, Ginger. Does anybody else have a question or comment, experience? One question I was asked recently was, our group is a face-to-face meeting. Our group is struggling. We cannot pay rent. Can another group who has a higher seventh tradition contribution support that? Can they pay for our rent? Would anybody who's on the panel like to answer that, if you know the answer? I have my answer, but I'm curious what Carolyn or Michael, based on your experience.
Am I unmuted?
You're muted. Unmuted. I can hear you, Michael.
So thinking about it, you could do that. A group could do that because it's not outside. But at some point, that group that's making the donation, if the donor group doesn't become self-supporting, they're going to get tired of giving money to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then ultimately, does it help? And one of the other things that we're doing, we're encouraging intergroups to do, and I know this board meeting next week, we're going to put it into action, is that if someone wants to start a new face-to-face meeting, to have literature, we're encouraging the intergroups to help with, it's like $51 worth of literature, and they pay it back over 3 months. And if the intergroup is unable to do that for whatever reason financially, then World Service will make that commitment so that we can start more face-to-face meetings. So I hope that answered the question a little bit.
Yeah, that's great. That's good information. So it's not, I think, wrong to get monies from other groups, but it also becomes more needy. And if the people in that particular group aren't able to contribute enough to keep that meeting open, they may need to look at, is that meeting sustainable? And do we need to open it or close it or keep it open? So that's another question. Another question I've had before is, do we issue a tax receipt? And the answer I've typed up here is, see how we'll issue a tax receipt if the member requests a receipt or if a single donation is over $250. The receipt reflects both the total amount given and the value of goods and services received in exchange. The donor may claim the difference as a tax deduction. The receipt would be for any amount over the value of what they're getting. Some in the groups and areas are 501c3s, which are nonprofit. So keep that in mind, that if you give over $250 and request it from World Service, that could be an option. Any other questions about finances?
Another note on that,
yes.
Beth, is that under $250, your check does serve as a check or other, like a PayPal confirmation, serves as your confirmation for IRS tax purposes. The IRS does not require a separate receipt other than over $250. There's some other nuanced things there too, but as a general rule, for contributions over $250, they would require a separate confirmation from the organization. Otherwise, your check or confirmation serves that purpose.
Excellent. Good information. Carolyn, can you think of any other questions that you've been asked by people for groups or finances?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I did want to just share on, jumping off of something Michael had mentioned, but whether, and this is not necessarily a question other than where does the money go, but where is it that we would, where is it that we see that we could be improving upon or make some inroads on if we did have the additional funds? Right now we, you know, operate and do certain things and do them well, but what could we be doing? And what a couple of the things is really carrying the See How message and really getting into the social media world, and things like having LinkedIn, a LinkedIn ad that would be targeted, ads that would be targeted towards healthcare professionals, so that the See How would get more visibility in terms of that. Now, something like that is looking at like $750 per month to be able to do that. So, and there may be costs involved in actually getting the ad together, and as well as just having the LinkedIn account. LinkedIn does have a nonprofit component, but it's, you still have to pay for things on LinkedIn. So not every place has kind of free things. And so, and a lot of the search, Google search and other things do have dollars involved to be able to do these things to help us carry the message. But we really want to move into the 21st century and be able to move the organization in that way. And it does take takes manual, you know, labor resources as well as dollars and cents to make it happen. The other one Michael mentioned was providing some literature for new meetings for where perhaps in unaffiliated areas, looking at developing literature and information for special needs accessibility, looking at things like, you know, text to donate for Seventh Tradition. One of the things that that we've had a lot of requests for are issuing certificates insurance for groups at meeting venues. They're often asked for that, but there is a cost involved to be able to provide that from WSO in related to our own certificate of insurance, and that costs us about $200. We estimate $200 per month for to be able to do that and provide that service back to the membership. The other area is to just increase, you know, See How support, particularly in the area of webmaster. We had a very nice situation in the past where it was a member who was a professional webmaster who provided those services for us at a very, very low rate. And so we were very spoiled. She has since retired, and so now we've been without that webmaster. We do have other services, but we would like some more dedicated service, and that does have an expense related to it. So, and we have also, you know, we talked about a little bit of the compensation and things like that, and we hadn't been giving cost of living adjustments and things like that over the years to our staff because we didn't have the funding to be able to do that. And so those are things that we are looking at now and would like to improve upon. Those are just a few ideas.
Thank you, Carolyn. Really appreciate that. A few more minutes left. We don't have to drag it out, but any other burning desires or comments or questions about Seventh Tradition and spirituality and where they mix?
Hi, Beth. It's Carol. Can I say something?
Go for it. Thank you.
Okay, I am incredibly cheap. I have such financial insecurity, and I'm just always commenting on my shares on the meetings, how See How saved my life, and how much money I've spent in the past going to different retreats and treatment centers and things like that. And my binges, actually, I was spending $25 a day. And I'm just going to say, I haven't given any money to CHOW yet. Well, I just did. I just canceled this gym membership that I haven't been to in like 2.5 years, and that recurring payment will go to CHOW. But anyways, it was such a great workshop. It was really eye-opening. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Okay. So, again, I hope this workshop has been helpful, and we do have more resources on our website about supporting the Phone Bridge Program or for supporting the World Service Program, reoccurring donation, one-time Seventh Tradition on PayPal, mailing to our World Service Office, clicking on Gratitude Month donation, putting an app on your phone. Again, there's myriad ways of showing our support, whether it's through service or money, and it's a we program. We need all of us to participate in our recovery and for the future generations, for the newcomer. So I just really want to encourage all of us, myself included, myself firstly, to continue to practice the steps and traditions in all areas of our affairs. All right, thank you. Okay, let me stop the recording now.